welcome to this week's Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. On our show this week, we're going to look at politics nationally and locally. In our first half hour, we're going to look at corporate influence on our politics since Citizens United. And in the second half hour, we're going to speak with leaders of a coalition of Vermont social service groups that are calling for alternatives to budget cuts in the state. But first, let's talk about national politics. We're joined now by Gordon Lafer, who is the author of a new book called The 1% Solution, How Corporations Are Remaking America One State at a Time. Gordon Lafer is a political economist and writer who has served as senior labor policy advisor for the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Education and Labor, and he's also been a labor organizer. Gordon Lafer, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
So lay out the basic premise of your new book, The 1% Solution.
Well, I think, you know, it's not news to anybody to say that the country is suffering through a crisis of economic inequality where it's gotten harder and harder for most normal working Americans to make ends meet or to get the kind of standard of living that their parents had. And, you know, people throw out different ideas for what has made life harder for so many people. And what is unseen is that one of the primary causes that is making it harder to make ends meet for, especially for non-professional workers, is that the biggest, richest, and most powerful political actors in the country, which are the big business lobbies, are working night and day in a very ambitious, well-funded 50-state campaign to change the laws of the economy in ways that make it harder for, you know, put more money in the hands of investors and management and owners, less money in the hands of the people who create that wealth by doing the work, and that are defunding public services that working and poor people rely on in everyday life.
And what is the mechanism through which they do this?
Well, the primary mechanism is something called the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. And what ALEC is, it has several hundred of the biggest corporations in the country that are members of it. It includes Facebook, Google, drug companies, technology companies, oil companies, Coca-Cola, General Motors, a lot of big companies that everybody's heard of and everybody probably buys from. So along with those companies, about one quarter of all state legislators in America are members of ALEC. They pay $50 a year in dues. All the rest of the expenses are paid by the corporations. And they meet several times a year in fancy resorts where they sit in committees that are made up half of elected officials and half of corporate lobbyists. And they write bills together that are kind of, you know, cookie-cutter model legislation. It has to be approved by an all-corporate board, and then it gets introduced in state after state after state all around the country. And then the same big companies that write the laws give money to those candidates, to those politicians' campaigns, spend their own money on TV and radio ads, and pay people in state-level think tanks to be like experts and produce white papers and stuff to support the policies they like. So it's a very well-funded, very well-coordinated 50-state campaign to move bills written by corporate lobbyists. And they, by their own estimate, pass something like 200 bills a year in America.
Why this focus by ALEC on a state-level strategy? Why that approach?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I think it's really important because most people, understandably, really, when they think about politics, if they do at all, they think about the president or the federal government. But the federal government is largely deadlocked and has been for most of the last decade. I mean, often they can't agree on who to name a post office after, much less something bigger. But a lot of things happen at the states, and states have a lot of power, even over things that are federally funded. Like education is mostly funded by the federal government, but what gets done with that funding is decided at the states. Minimum wage, unemployment insurance, food stamps, a right to sick leave, corporate taxes, environmental regulations, all these things are decided at the state level. And partly because more or less nobody is paying attention to state politics, the corporate lobbies have had a much freer hand to rewrite the rules at the state level than they have at the level of Congress and the Senate.
So you write in your new book, you take a few case studies, and you start with Wisconsin. Explain what happened in Wisconsin that exemplifies what the issues you're talking about.
Well, you know, the thing that was most famous in Wisconsin was early in 2011, when Governor Walker and the Republican legislature basically did away with union rights, with collective bargaining rights for all of the public employees in Wisconsin. And that amounted to a huge, both a lot of layoffs and a huge pay cut. One of the things that's important to know is that Wisconsin was one of the states that was not in a deficit. So this was not in response to a budget deficit. It was just a political desire to do away with unions and do away with the right to bargain. At the time that that happened, Governor Walker said something like, this is not the exact quote, but more or less he said, well, we have to do away with union rights for public employees because we can't live in a situation where the public employees are the haves and the taxpayers who foot the bill are the have-nots. So he kind of said, you know, there's fat and lazy government workers who are getting living high off the hog on other people's hard-earned tax dollar. We need to cut them down to size to help the hard-working taxpayers in the non-union private sector. But once he attacked the public workers and did that successfully, after that, he passed a so-called right-to-work bill to attack private sector unions, but then went after, you say, well, what did he do for hardworking non-union taxpayers in the private sector? And the answer is cutting wages in the construction industry, banning a right to paid sick leave, very dramatic cuts in education funding. They eliminated the right, this one is hard to believe, but it's true, they eliminated in Wisconsin the right to one day's rest in a seven-day week. So they have just gone after everything, not only public employees, but private sector workers, union and non-union. And all of this was funded by the Chamber of Commerce, by the Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity, and by other big business lobbies.
So some of the things you're talking about have a clear profit motive, you know, attacking labor unions, reducing wages, eliminating days off. But some of Alex's agenda is on social issues, like opposing gun control and things like that. Can you talk about why would corporations be, you know, what is the range of issues that Alex is tackling?
So, you know, there are a lot of issues that are designed to help the profit of a particular company, and actually gun control is one of them, because the National Rifle Association is a member of ALEC, and while there are many millions of rank-and-file members of the NRA who may be motivated by ideological issues, the real power of the NRA is the gun manufacturing companies, and their interest is an economic interest in just selling more, like any company. So ALEC's position on gun control is really about that. And there are other instances like that. So Coca-Cola is a member, and ALEC lobbies against limits on sugary soft drinks. The technology companies are members, and ALEC lobbies to ban cities from providing free broadband internet to their citizens. But then you get down to things like defunding education, or defunding libraries, or defunding mass transit. And this is a thing that I think is really important to look at and very hard to look at, because what the record shows sounds almost too conspiratorial to be true, which is that the big corporate lobbies are pushing legislation to intentionally cut those kind of public services. And I'll just give you one example. In 2011, Arizona, a lot of states had budget deficits, including Arizona. Arizona completely eliminated its funding for preschool for four-year-olds from low-income families. But in the same year, the same legislature created new tax cuts for corporations and the rich that cost about $500 million a year. So they could have chosen to use that money to keep over 100,000 poor four-year-olds in preschool and decided instead to give more money to the people who are already the most privileged. And then they passed a bill, a change to the state constitution, that basically says you can't ever raise taxes by more than the rate of inflation, which in Arizona would mean you will never again have preschool for four-year-olds. So they're kind of saying intentionally, at the height of the worst recession in 70 years, we want you to make steep cuts, and then we want to lock them in. And this was all done by the same legislature, with the same ALEC-affiliated legislators, backed by the same business lobbies. So when we look at things like that, we see that part of their agenda is to cut public services. And it's not just to make tax cuts for themselves, but I think to do away with the idea that there are things we have as a right as citizens that the government has to provide us, and to make people that much more dependent on private employers by not being able to have some of our basic needs met just through public services.
You're listening to the Vermont Conversation, and we're talking in this half hour with Gordon Lafer, author of the new book, The 1% Solution, How Corporations Are Remaking America One State at a Time. Gordon, you began this book right after Citizens United was passed in 2010. What was your motivation for starting this project?
Well, you know, I saw what happened in Wisconsin, which started in February 2011, and then I started to see the same things happening, similar things happening in a lot of other states. And in each state, people tended to think, oh, this comes from Senator so-and-so or Governor so-and-so or whatever, and it's a response to the particular problems that we have here in Vermont or New Hampshire or Wisconsin or wherever. And I started thinking, you know, this can't be true. This can't all be coincidence. And then started doing research, and the more I researched, the more I found that a whole range of laws were being introduced in cookie-cutter fashion in state after state after state, and none of them were the idea of some particular legislator or a response to conditions in a particular state, because you saw the same laws being passed in states with deficits and without deficits, with unions and without unions. So that's what this book is trying to put together, that whole big picture. It tracks all of the laws passed in all 50 states with the backing of the corporate lobby since Citizens United across about 30 different issues that have to do with jobs and the economy and public services.
Has there been any effective pushback against ALEC that has succeeded anywhere?
Well, I think that, I think that, you know, one of the things that is hopeful is that while ALEC and the Chamber of Commerce and other corporate lobbies have a lot of power at the state legislature, the one thing they have failed at is convincing the public that their ideas are good ideas. Now, this doesn't mean that they can't get people elected. I mean, people vote for politicians for all kinds of reasons, not only because of these economic policies. But when you look at public opinion and at places where people have been able to vote on a single issue as opposed to for candidates, places where you can vote on ballot initiatives, either at the state or local level, a majority of both Republicans and Democrats favor a significant increase in the minimum wage, believe that people should have the right to some minimum number of paid sick leave, believe that you should have a reasonable schedule, meaning like your boss shouldn't be able to say, I want you to be available the whole week on call for when I need you, but I'm not guaranteeing you any time, but you can't take a second job or plan anything with your kids because you always have to be available. Majority of both parties support that. A majority of both parties support affordable health care, small class sizes in education, well-trained teachers. So on an issue-by-issue basis, I think, you know, we've seen a lot of states and cities pass laws about this, about raising the minimum wage or right to sick leave. And there's kind of a contest going on now between the public's ability to enact things that there's bipartisan support for and the corporate lobby's ability to move in the other way through politicians at the state level.
You know, here's the thing that I always wonder about. So you have the American Legislative Exchange Council, this corporate lobby, defunding public education in states. And yet, when you have states such as you have in the, you know, in Mississippi, Arizona, where you have, you know, very low social indicators, low levels of education, corporations actually have a very difficult time finding qualified workers to, you know, fill their jobs. So how is that good for business?
Well, I think, in fact, they don't have too hard a time finding qualified workers to fill their jobs. And one of the things that is going on that I think is scary is that because of the degree of globalization of the economy, we now have companies who are some of the biggest actors in American politics, but whose self-interest is increasingly separate from the interests of Americans as citizens. So, you know, to give you one example, the president of General Motors famously claimed in 1953 that what's good for GM is good for America. So it might not exactly have been true then, but it was closer to true when GM's cars were built by Americans and bought by Americans. Now, General Motors, most of its employees are overseas, and two-thirds of the cars it sells are overseas. It is still a major political player. It's active in ALEC. It's a partner of the Chamber of Commerce. It's on the board of the National Association of Manufacturers. But its interests no longer align with the country in the way that they do. So it's not that Americans are unimportant, but we're seeing this divorce between corporate interests and the interests, of Americans either as workers or as consumers. So when you look at something like education and you say, hey, there's a crisis of education here, why isn't it, you know, why don't the corporations step up and say we should invest in education? It's partly because they don't see it as a crisis for them, even if it's a crisis for the country.
you, as we discussed earlier, you raised the issue of Wisconsin, and you know, I've often thought here in New England, we're not so special, we're not so different, and that when you look at places like Wisconsin, Wisconsin has had you know, senators like Russ Feingold and other progressive leaders. How does a state get hijacked by you know, corporate influenced groups like this?
Well, it's largely to do with money. I mean, I know it sounds conspiratorial, but it's, you know, one of those, it's sometimes the simplest thing really is the answer. And the real puzzle to figure out is not just, you know, the difference between Wisconsin and New England, but the difference between a state like Wisconsin in its state politics and in its federal politics. Because when you look at the presidential election, Wisconsin is still a swing state. But there's a whole bunch of states, that Wisconsin, Michigan, North Carolina, Florida even, who in presidential elections, they could go either way. They're like the definition of purple states. But their state legislature is radical right wing. So when Citizens United decision was made in January of 2010, and within months, there was an organization funded largely by the Chamber of Commerce that was set up specifically to capture state legislatures. And they poured tons of money into that. And because of that, 11 new states in November of 2010 went from being either Democratic-controlled or mixed Democratic and Republican to being wall-to-wall Republican. That includes Wisconsin. And those were states where a lot of this legislation was pushed through. And obviously, there's never a single explanation for something in politics, but the money made a big difference.
And you write about something called Red Map. Explain what that is.
So this was that project, Project Red Map, which stood for Redistricting Majority Project, but also, as it sounds, was a plan to turn the map of states red, meaning GOP-controlled, was hatched by the Chamber of Commerce and some other strategists. And they, you know, the Citizens United decision legally said both corporations and unions can now spend an unlimited amount of money on politics. But no labor union was sitting on a big pile of cash that just needed a legal okay to throw into politics, but corporations were. So the budget of the Chamber of Commerce and other corporate lobbies grew by 600% between 2008 and 2012. So they put that money in 2010 into state legislative races. And 2010 was partly because it was the first election when they were allowed to spend as much as they wanted, and partly because 2010 was a census year, which means it's the people elected in that year would also redraw the districts for how people get elected both to Congress and to the state legislature. But Project Red Map is what resulted in turning Pennsylvania, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, Wisconsin, and other states into wall-to-wall Republican states, and it was an intentional, very well-funded project.
Were Democrats just asleep at the switch?
Well, I'm sure there's plenty of incompetence and criticism to be made any place in the political system, certainly including the Democratic Party. But there's just a huge imbalance in money, also. You know, and when people say, you know, I hear people in progressive organizations say, we need to learn from ALEC and do what they did. The truth is, I think the progressive organizations are kind of have been dealt a different hand and need to play the hand they've been dealt with. And what they have not been dealt with is hundreds of millions of extra dollars to throw at politicians. And, you know, in state legislative races are bought cheaply. You know, $50,000, $100,000 often is enough to swing a state legislative race one way or the other. So I think progressives need to figure out a way to organize in a more grassroots way and around issues that will grab people's attention and not think that they're going to outspend the corporate lobbies, because that'll never happen.
So how has Trump's election shaped your thinking about all of the issues in your book?
Well, it's very interesting. You know, Trump was opposed by all of the big corporate lobbies. They didn't want somebody running on economic populism or on anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim, anti-women kind of policies. And now that he's in office, I think everybody's trying to figure out how much of their things are they going to be able to get. I mean, when you look at what Trump has actually done so far, and certainly who he's appointed to the cabinet, it's a very pro-corporate cabinet. There's a lot of Wall Street people there. There are a lot of corporate lobbyists there. And so far, the statements that he's made about what's he actually going to do about things like renegotiating NAFTA have been very mild. So I think, you know, it's early to tell, but I think everybody's trying to figure out, okay, where is he actually going to come down for real? But one of the things we saw in the election was, you know, the two most popular candidates were Bernie Sanders from your state and Donald Trump. I think that's because life has gotten so hard for so many Americans that somebody who just says, you know, mild, incremental, moderate things is not enough anymore. And, you know, President Trump essentially ran on the promise of creating decently paying jobs for people without college degrees. If he doesn't do that, then we're going to see what happens with his base.
So just this week, we've had razor-thin elections in congressional seats in Kansas and in Georgia. These were solid Republican congressional seats, and now they are, you know, they're being won by razor-thin majorities. What does that tell you about what's going on?
Well, I mean, clearly the, you know, people who would normally be Democratic or even liberal Republican voters, I think, have been you know, agitated and activated in much greater numbers and much greater urgency than they were before. I would guess probably many people who might have voted for Hillary Clinton but didn't bother to vote in the fall would vote now if there was an election now, because they're scared or concerned about what the Trump administration is doing. But I really think the bigger story is among working-class conservative people who voted for Trump out of hope that he would do something to improve their lives and take their situation seriously in a way that they hadn't felt happened up to now. And I think that the danger will be if he doesn't really improve people's lives that much, and that kind of slowly dawns on the people who voted for him, the danger is that the only political move for the Trump campaign 4 years from now may be to whip up even greater white nationalist hysteria, anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim, misogynist, whatever it will be. And I think that that's a point that will be an even more telling point that we're at now, and in a way is more important to say what happens to conservative people who, for understandable reasons, put their hope in Trump, and when that hope gets dashed, which way do they turn politically?
Okay. Well, we've been speaking with Gordon Lafer, author of The 1% Solution, How Corporations Are Remaking America One State at a Time. Gordon, thanks so much for joining us this week on The Vermont Conversation.
Thanks for having me.
And when we come back, we'll talk with a coalition of Vermont social service organizations calling for alternatives to budget cuts here in Vermont. Stay tuned.